Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited to have back in the studio, returning for the second week in a row, Mr. Adam Riske, to talk about The Fate of the Furious.
You can wear any of my shirts as long as it's a Morona.
We are going to be talking about the first movie of not summer, but basically a summer movie that's
soft summer.
Out a few weeks early, making all kinds of money. The eighth installment in the Fast and Furious franchise. We have been podcasting these since Fast 5. In the past, I have been joined by Doug, and he was not able to see the movie. And Adam Riske is, I believe, our site's expert on the Fast and Furious series.
I am not here to replace Doug. No. I'm no Scott Eastwood.
We need to talk about Scott Eastwood. That's going to be the title of this podcast. We need to talk about Eastwood.
Yeah. I'm honored to be here. I love this franchise so much. It's my favorite franchise. It's the movie series that it's my Marvel, it's my Star Wars, it's the one that I geek out about the most. So this show might be a little bit more like plot character specific, where I get like really involved, as opposed to like, what do you think of this performance? Right, I'm going to be more like, can you believe what's happening with Letty? It's going to be like stuff like that.
So. All right. We will talk spoiler free about The Fate of the Furious for a little while, and we'll give you plenty of notice when we move into spoilers a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm.
But first, we will begin. Adam Riske, I will ask you, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, I feel like I was just here a week ago. So
you know what? You were.
You know what?
So it's hard to find stuff. Like, what else have I seen?
I agree with you, and I give you so much credit for every week having a new batch of titles
you
to should, talk at the beginning of the
show.
You
should read the list of the movies I don't talk about.
Oh, wow.
Because there's lots of movies. I'm like, why would I bring this up on the show?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of cases of that for me, too. Like, I start and stop a lot of movies at home. So, like, this afternoon I tried to watch Meet the Deedles.
I've never seen that. That's
and
Pete Walks, I know.
Yeah, but I made it a half hour. Because every time, I think about Fate of the Furious, it makes me sad. Because there's no Paul Walker. So I was like, what Paul Walker title do I want to watch? So I'm just like, well, maybe Hours? I've never seen Hours. Or like, maybe I'll revisit
never
The Skulls
Hours.
For the first
Oof.
Time since college.
Oof.
But I'm just like, no, I'll start at Origins Walker, which is Meet the Deedles. I won't talk about it at length, but I do, my favorite memory of Meet the Deedles, and I wrote about this in one of my first columns on the site, which was about celebrities that I've met at conventions and just like little kind of fun stories. I met Robert Englund when he was at Flashback Weekend probably 10 years ago, and he was talking to this girl who was in front of me in line, and they were talking about his role in Meet the Deedles, and he was giving some like onset dish about what happened there. And apparently AJ Langer fell like so hard for Paul Walker on set.
Who could blame her?
I don't know. But the thing that bugs me is just like, I kind of wish they made Walker Langer babies.
Yeah, for sure.
Cause I feel like they are a cute couple, and I could get on board with that. But I was just fascinated by it. It was like, the best fortune teller ever, where it's just like you get three questions for $20. I'm just like, I don't even want your autograph. I just want to hear like more set stories. So
so Meet the Deedles, hard pass. All right.
Hard pass.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then I watched I guess I'll bring this up. It's a mini series.
It's not a
movie, but it's on Netflix. I watched Five Came Back.
Okay.
Really liked it.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. This is the documentary about the five Hollywood directors who go to World War II for various purposes. Serving in the army, serving in the military, they're put to use, building kind of propaganda movies. And then also, a lot of, obviously with a very complex war, a lot of things happen where, you know, they end up filming like historical records for like the Nuremberg trials, because George Stevens is the one of the directors who, and he ended up when they liberated Dachau and everything like that. And it's terrifically put together. It's a little over 3 hours. Very interesting, very sobering, because you think of this as the good war in many ways, but then there's a lot of ways where it's just like how racist the propaganda was.
Sure.
The treatment of the Japanese, and like their concern about how Japanese Americans would feel about how they were being depicted and how they could reacclimate after the internment camps and everything like that. So, the treatment of African American soldiers, it was just super interesting. So I would highly recommend that one.
All right, cool.
Staying on the Depression Netflix tip, I watched 13th finally.
Oh, good. Okay.
I really like that too.
Yeah.
I think Ava DuVernay is, she's got a unique talent of making, social stories and social issues very emotionally resonant. So in Selma, like, she basically made something that I had read about, you know, in school and books and everything like that come to life, and makes it so much so raw. And I love that movie. And then 13th, I think, is not quite as strong, just basically based on, you know, format. I thought the first third and the last third were really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle third I didn't like as much, because it felt more like a cable news episode.
Okay.
Where instead of talking to professors who might have a little bit more insight into the matters, or just kind of recording like how everything is kind of strung together from the from slavery to the prison system and everything like that, and making those connections, the middle section is more about corporations who profit off of off of the prison system and everything, and kind of how just kind of corrupted everything's gotten in many ways. And I thought that section was it was the one where there was the most pundits and
sure.
the most so things like that. So I felt like there was, and politicians and stuff, and so I felt like a lot of the stuff they were saying kind of was agenda based
sure.
and everything. But it's also good, it's worth recommending. And then I watched Take Me Home Tonight.
Oh,
the,
right. Okay.
2011 but shot in 2007 2007, who says 2007, comedy directed by Michael Douse, who also did Goon. I didn't realize
okay.
I was a big Douse
either.
Fan, but
yeah.
I'm a fairly sized Douse fan at this point. I'm down with Douse. And then it stars Topher Grace, Anna Faris, Chris Pratt, Dan
Martin.
Fogler, who's like the De Niro to Josh Gad's Pacino. or maybe it's the other way around. Yeah. Gad's more the De Niro.
Okay.
But can you imagine that scene in Heat with those two, those two titans? And then, I rewatched it because on Pure Cinema, they did a show on underrated movies from the 2000s. And number 9 was on Rupert Pupkin's list was Take Me Home Tonight. And he also had like Mystery Team on there. And I'm like, this list speaks to me. This is a really good list. So I had seen Take Me Home Tonight when it came out on DVD, and remembered enjoying it a lot more than I thought that I would. And I rewatched it, and I didn't like it as much, but it's still very watchable, very pleasant, kind of funny. So if you've never seen it, I'd recommend it. It's a little bit of an underseen, you know, good time. I won't say gem.
The cast is good. Teresa Palmer, is that the girl he's in love with?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's one of those cases where you're like, I get it, like, right away. So she's really, I don't know, there's something to her. I like Teresa Palmer.
It's like Can't Hardly Wait for a slightly older set, right?
Yeah. And I think that's funny that you should bring that up, because one of the things that I think is why I liked it a little bit less is I'm over that period in my life of like 20 something angst, where it's just like, well, what, how is my life going to be meaningful and all this stuff like that. And now I'm just like, I just want to like go to work and not be mad when I come home. Like, I have like simpler goals. So there's stuff like that. And it infuriated me that like Topher Grace is supposed to be this numbers whiz, and they're just like, you should be an engineer. And he's just like, I know I'm brilliant at being an engineer, but it's not what my passion is, and I want to do this and do that. I'm just like, bro, you can just do your job and make shit tons of money, and then do what you're passionate about on your free time,
like
yo.
The rest of us.
Yeah, it's just like, oh,
minus
God.
The shit tons of money.
Exactly. It's like you don't. But it's almost like a. It's like if Will Hunting was just like, you know what? I want to work at my construction job. Now I'm comparing Topher Grace to Will Hunting. It's like Tad Hamilton Hunting.
Fucking take me home tonight, kid.
Yeah. that's pretty much it.
All right. Yep. I watched something that you and Rob reviewed last week, which is the new Joe Swanberg movie, Win It All.
Yes.
And I agreed with the review that you guys wrote over at fthismovie.com or fthismovie.net. It's very pleasant. Mm-hmm. Jake Johnson's really good. All the dynamics feel believable, you know? It seemed to... It wasn't a movie that was like, I'm going to take you inside the gambling world.
Yeah.
But there were certain things that I felt like it seemed to understand about that world that maybe Joe Swanberg had researched it a little or just spent some time or whatever. But yeah, very enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. I like that it subverted my conditioning to gambling movies. Where,
I mostly don't like gambling movies because I don't like watching somebody who's like so self-destructive and out of control.
Yeah.
I can't handle that.
Yeah. And I thought it was just kind of neat, like how the guy who asks him to hold the money and everything, like he's ostensibly a bad dude, but it's just like, well, Jake Johnson never did anything to him prior to that. So he didn't see the badness of this guy. So it's kind of like, it's just nice that, you know, there's some layer to it. It's like the bad guy isn't the bad guy to everyone. He's just the bad guy when he needs to be the bad guy. So,
Yeah, I dug it. I watched a movie. I think that I feel like half of the stuff I watch these days is probably stuff I hear talked about on Pure Cinema or recommended on Pure Cinema. It's either like, oh, I got to rewatch that, or I've never seen that. I want to see it for the first time.
Yeah.
I think this was a movie that got brought up on there, like in passing, not even as a recommendation. It's a movie from 1975 called Inserts.
Okay.
Starring Richard Dreyfuss as a reclusive filmmaker in, like, I want to say the 20s.
Okay.
The whole movie takes place in his house. It's all in the, like, basically real time. He was maybe once promising and talented and famous and is now basically just shooting porn, basically, in his, like weird porn where, like, there's abuse, like, people getting slapped around stuff. Roughies, I believe they were called.
Is Machine in it from 8mm?
Sadly, no. This is older than that. Bob Hoskins shows up as, like, a gangster who's, like, bankrolling the thing. Veronica Cartwright?
Yeah.
Alien.
From
right?
Alien?
Yeah. She shows up. She's really good. And then about halfway through, Jessica Harper comes into the movie and gives this incredible performance. The entire second half of the movie is essentially just this two-person drama between Dreyfuss and Jessica Harper that goes in all these weird directions that you don't see coming.
Mm.
Really interesting movie. I mean, I think it's a tough one to, like, recommend to anyone, but I think anybody who's kind of interested in films that are different or in, you know, acting or whatever. you guys are going to have to forgive me. I've been sick for days and days, and I'm still sick.
I'll also apologize in advance because I've had a cough for a few weeks, and if I laugh, I sometimes wheeze. So I will wheeze off.
Will not be funny.
Yeah.
I know that's a big bummer for people who listen to podcasts, and people are always quick to, like, they cough and they didn't cover it. So we're sorry. We're both ill, but we want to get this podcast out to everyone on Monday. So... I had to force myself to see Fate of the Furious this weekend so that we could talk about it. Anyway, Inserts is really interesting. I think you should check it out. And I think the only other stuff.
Who directed Inserts?
I don't know off the top of my head.
It wasn't like a name.
I don't think it was.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, but it wasn't a name that I totally recognized.
Okay.
I don't know. And then I rewatched Too Fast, Too Furious, and Fast Five.
Nice. But yeah.
I'm guessing we'll talk about those in the span of our discussion, but I feel like those are the two that I rewatched the most.
It's funny. This time I rewatched all of them leading up to the column I wrote last week. But then after seeing Fate of the Furious,
you watched them again?
No, I rewatched 6 and 7 because there's the most ties to 8 okay. in those. So we'll get into that. But
I haven't rewatched 7 ever.
7's on HBO and okay. Cinemax a lot. Okay. But I watched my Blu-ray because 6 and 7, I think, and 5 also have extended versions.
Yeah.
And I had never seen the extended versions. So I didn't notice any difference in 6, 7. I noticed like a few little lines of dialogue here and there. Like in the beginning scene, there's with Statham and Luke Evans in the hospital, there's a little bit extra dialogue, which actually makes sort of what's happening in 8 makes a little more sense.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that was in the extended version, but not in the theatrical version. But, yeah, 6, I think, is just kind of like this almost perfect distillation of the past of the franchise and, like, kind of where it goes a little bit after that. It's kind of like the best crew, I think, of it. Like, of the people.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I think that's why I like going back to 6 a lot, is because it's my favorite iteration of that crew. Yeah. And then... 7, I am going, like, that's always been kind of a middle of the road Fast and Furious for me, but it's moving more into the favorites list than the kind of also Rans list for okay. me. I'm getting more used to it, and the Paul Walker stuff is not as distracting to
right.
me anymore.
Right.
And I think that movie has a lot of good moments in it, even if the whole isn't, you know, like running as smoothly as some of the earlier entries.
All right, well, so let's segue right from that mm-hmm. into the Fate of the Furious. Like I said, we will go spoiler-free for a little bit. We'll just give some kind of initial impressions, and then maybe we'll move into spoilers. But, mm-hmm. Animorski, this is your favorite franchise.
Yes.
How does the Fate of the Furious stack up?
The Fate and the Furious left me sad and disappointed.
Okay.
The Fate of the Furious is... you mentioned last week, I think this might be one Jenga piece too many.
Yeah.
And that line ran through my head a number of times during this movie. I think, and this is so stupid, but you'd set it up on a show once with Doug. You were talking about an article that was talking about Rob Zombie's latest album. And he was saying, well, of course you don't like it as much as the old stuff. It's brand new. You just heard it for the first time. So I'm quoting a memory of an article you read. So that's how deep this canon of F this movie can run. there's the cough.
There it is.
There's the first cough. I got to say grace. So I thought about that, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I just need to get used to it. Or see how 9 and 10 play out. Maybe they will make 8 better in some way. So we'll see. I was having like an existential crisis after seeing the movie. I saw it on Thursday night. I go, to see every new Fast and Furious movie with my mom, because sometimes family means literal family. So I saw it with her. She liked it. She asked me what I thought. I said I liked maybe the first 15 minutes, and then I just did not like the rest of the movie all that much, and it made me really sad. And I was texting Rob about it, and like he was basically like my fast therapist. Because he asked me how, because this is one thing, like after I saw it, I was almost afraid to tell people what I thought about it, because I was just like, I don't want it to be one of those things where I said, oh, I don't like it, but then like I go back and I say like, oh, actually, you know, like sure. it grew on me and everything.
Sure.
And also like I didn't want to relive it because it would hurt too much in certain ways. like when I would go to work on Friday and everything, and like my coworkers who also like the franchise, they're like, oh, what'd you think of it? I was just like, you go first, because I wanted to see what they said. And if they liked it, I didn't want to like complain about it. But if they didn't like it, then I felt an invitation to gripe a little. And my coworker goes, oh, I saw it at the Gurney Mills Mall in 4DX. And I was just like, what is that? And he said, it's like the D-Box thing, but they shoot out mist at you, and there's like smells and everything.
No, thank you.
And I said,
just motor oil and brute cologne every time.
Yeah,
Dom
exactly.
is on screen.
And I said, all right, on Thursday night, I did the quarter mile. On Friday night, I'm going to go to 40X and I'm going to do the Cuban mile.
Holy shit.
So I did everything that I could to prep for round two. I'm not embellishing. I went to the library and rented 3 Fast and Furious soundtracks for the drive to Gurnee. I bought a can of NOS energy drink. And then I got to the theater early and I went to the bar and drank a Corona.
Nice. You were ready.
I was ready. I was giving the movie every chance that it could have. I sat in the theater. 40X was crazy. I would recommend doing it once. It is so weird. It made the movie more enjoyable,
okay. But
in an inorganic way. some highlights from that is the seat would move like when Hobbs's daughter kicked a soccer ball, and I'm like, I didn't need that, but that's okay.
Right.
So it's like anything.
You gotta feel it.
Yeah, if they have an establishing shot over like Havana, then the seat like floats.
What?
And then like if a car's revving, then it shakes. When the car in the Cuba scene is on fire, when Dom's driving in reverse, this smell that's supposed to be fire, but it smells more like chili powder is coming out, and it's gross.
How does any of this make a movie better? You know what I mean?
Like, it was weird. And then my favorite, though, was there's all this going on, and then you kind of get desensitized to it because it's a 2-hour movie. You're just like, okay, well, I know like my seat's going to vibrate with cars and all this stuff like that. And then when the Russia sequence happens at the end, then mist starts shooting out of the seat. My favorite part is there's I might have to say, all right, I'm going to say this for spoilers because there's a little bit of a spoiler thing.
Sure.
But remind me to tell you about the guy at the 40X screening.
Okay.
But that being said, the second viewing of Fate of the Furious was slightly better, but I think that it's my least favorite of the franchise.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if it's my least favorite. It's certainly my least favorite of the kind of post Fast Five. Like, I feel like, you know, it's essentially 2 franchises, right? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we have 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
And both times it's kind of diminishing returns, I think.
Yeah.
One is the strongest, and then they get worse from there, and then 5 is great, and then they kind of get worse from there. Which isn't to say, you know, I enjoy Fast 6 quite a bit. Mm-hmm. 6 to me is kind of like I totally agree with you that it's the best team.
Yeah.
And even seeing like The Rock now working side by side with them, and then the inclusion of Gina Carano, it's like, this is everybody I want to see in a movie.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, where it's like, this is kind of the same movie again. Which isn't bad. I like Chamber of Secrets, but it just is so reminiscent of the movie before it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going back and forth because I'm like, oh, I really was sick when I sat through this and was trying to stay positive, but it lost me fairly quickly. I thought it felt really long. And I'm trying to wrap my head around why I didn't. I mean, there are specific reasons that we can talk about in terms of characters and dialogue or whatever, you know, reasons why I wasn't crazy about the movie.
Where did it lose you? Because I know exactly where it started to lose me.
Mm.
And I'm curious if it's the same moment.
It was pretty early on. Honestly, and I don't think this is a spoiler, that scene you mentioned with the soccer.
Yeah.
It's a scene of Dwayne Johnson coaching his daughter's soccer team. And the way it's written and the way it's shot, to me, smacked so much of a Michael Bay movie.
It definitely felt that way because it's like the camera's so close on Dwayne Johnson's head as not to reveal that he's on the soccer field. So that's like the reveal is the joke, and it seems like hacky.
It was real hacky because even just that long dance sequence and then the girl, like, I don't want to play. It all just smacked of Michael Bay.
Yeah.
And then from there it leaps to, okay, we're working this job in Berlin.
Yes.
And honestly, I mean, it's like, I'm on board with this series. I like this series. But it was one of the moments where I had to stop and be like, wait, what? Like, we need to get this super high-tech weapon out of Berlin.
Yeah.
Let's get these people who can drive. It was almost like it was somehow believable in, like, 5 and 6, less so in 7. But by now, I'm just like, why are these people called in for these jobs?
Well,
like,
I want to talk about that real quick, because in 6, there's, or was it 7? There's a scene that either in 6 or, no, it's in 7. Mr. Nobody and Dom and Brian are going after Shaw because they have the God's Eye now and they can locate Shaw. And then Dom says, the rest of my team is staying basically because they're drivers. They're not fighters. And then by the end of Fate of the Furious, you've got like Ludacris and Tyrese and Michelle Rodriguez with machine guns.
Right.
And
right.
They're SEAL Team 6.
Right.
And yeah, I think that one thing I want to... I'll mention this quickly, and then I want to get back to kind of where... So the Rock scene with the soccer is kind of where you think
I think that was the first, because I actually liked that first racing sequence.
I love the first racing scene.
Minus the CGI fire.
Yes.
Which, again, part of the... Well, we could talk about that, but for me, one of the appeals of this franchise, especially going back to, like, the original film, is its use of practical vehicles and stunts.
Yeah.
And this movie gets so far away from that, I think, to it's all just
ways,
a big CGI mess, including CGI fire.
Yeah.
And that, to me, doesn't work as well for that scene where, like, a real fire would make the moment kind of that much more, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But I really liked that sequence.
Yes, me too. The thing I wanted to mention about the SEAL Team 6 aspect of it is... I think one of the reasons why I didn't like Fate of the Furious as much as some of the other entries, or all the other entries, really, is because I feel like it's become like kind of a militarization of the franchise. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's too tech, it's too Hobbs, it's sort of losing its identity, where at the end of the movie, and this isn't a spoiler, but like they have one of their barbecue scenes where they all meet up at a barbecue. And I'm looking around the table, and I don't see chemistry there anymore. They almost feel like strangers. It's like anybody can be in this family now.
Yes, which we need to talk about, because I'm like, why the fuck are you at that table?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like anybody can be at this family now. And the thing that depressed me the most was when they leave that scene and it goes to the end credits, this was the first time where I said, this could end now. And I would be okay with it because I don't need to see these characters anymore.
No. Well, because... all right, so we'll get into spoilers pretty soon. But I think, again, there are people whose heads are exploding because they're like, what? You're just watching it for like cars and stunts, right? But one of the appeals of the series, particularly 5, 6, 7, even 4, you know, we'll all go all the way back to 1, whatever, is the characters. Now, I don't love Dominic Toretto, like, at all. But he is a character, and I understand his relationship to the other people. And Roman Pierce is a character. And there were enough character beats in past entries that it made it, you know, fun to hang out with these people. Or I knew who they were. I knew how they would act in certain situations. I feel like there are very few character beats in this movie. Dwayne Johnson gets a few.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel gets a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know... I won't say that I feared that this is what would happen in the post-Paul Walker era. But it's becoming the Vin Diesel show, like, to such a degree.
And I was okay with that for the opening scene, because one thing that first off, it's odd how close the opening scene of this movie is to, like, XXX3.
Yeah. A lot of this movie, actually. Yeah. All the stuff on the airplane.
Yeah.
I was like... This I'm watching XXX again.
We'll get to the airplane. One of the things I liked about the opening scene, besides making me realize how much I need just stupid racing in this franchise. Like, I know it kind of became in vogue to say, it's just like, oh, I'm kind of glad it went away, right. And it reinvented itself into heist and like the Avengers and to spy James Bond, stuff like that. But I like racing in these movies. Like, I like Too Fast, Too Furious for the dumb races. Right. I like the original Fast and Furious's dumb races. I like that stuff. And, you know, they threw us a bone at the beginning of Fate of the Furious, and I think that was partly in honor of Paul Walker, because he was always trying to push Vin Diesel to get more racing in the movies. That was kind of his thing. And I thought that the setting was beautiful. It just popped. It like looked similar to how Too Fast and Furious Miami's popping.
Super colorful.
Colorful. Really fun and dopey and stupid, but in a way that I love, where it's all about honor and code and respect. And I'm Dominic Toretto is like Dom Corleone. I think it's awesome. And I like that he's like, seems happy and he's smiling.
Yeah. And like Michelle Rodriguez smiles. That's
smiling.
My favorite.
Yeah. They seem like happy and everything. And I would, and you know, obviously this movie needs a story, but I was bummed when they left Cuba and they had to get into the story of this, where it took a lot of, all the energy that was in that scene was taken away. Going back to Cuba, though, I thought it was so funny, like when that race ended, where he's like immediately picks up a little girl, like he's this hero.
He's the man of the people. It was Triple X all over again.
It was so funny. It was so funny to me. And then he gives the Impala to his cousin and everything, and they're always just, they're like, Dominic Toretto, he gives and never takes away. And I just love that. And also, they're there on their honeymoon, so like, what impact he makes in such a short amount of time. But I love that dopiness. That's some of the things that I really admire about the franchise. Seeing a lot of people's reactions to the movie that I read on social media is, a lot of people, I think, really enjoy the bigness of the series and like how over the top it's gotten and everything like that. And I feel like if that is what you like most out of the franchise, then you're going to be happier with this movie than I was, because I'm more of the in reverse type of Fast and Furious fan, where like I tolerate the bigness of it, but I like the smaller aspects of it. So I just want something different out of the series than that. And I also discovered this time the way to watch this series without it being sad anymore, because it's almost like you've got this cloud hanging over the franchise because you know about Furious 7. If you watch them in reverse, it becomes this joyful experience again. So I watched 8, and then I went and watched Furious 7 next, and I watched 6 again, and now I think I'm going to do it that way.
Yeah.
So it changes a little bit. Yeah.
There's so many things I want to touch on here.
There's so much to say about this
there
movie.
Is. Yeah. So a couple things. One, that Cuba sequence, very early, Michelle Rodriguez, one of her first moments, somebody insults Dominic or something, and she kind of laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, uh-oh, or something to that effect. And I was like, ooh, neat. It was a charming moment that I was like, oh, we're going to get a different Letty in this movie, not just scowling, tough-ass Letty, right?
Yeah.
Nope, that's who we got. Two, I don't think I love the bigness. Like, I liked the bigness at the end of Fast 5 where they're dragging the safe. I was like, well, I've never seen that in a movie, and that's pretty crazy and fun. And I even was willing to go along with the bigness at the end of 6, which is ridiculous, where they're bringing down a plane with their cars.
Me too.
That's about as far as I was willing to go, because that was one of my issues with 7, was like, it had outgrown itself.
My bigness break off was the mountain chase. After the mountain chase,
which was cool,
the mountain
but
chase
like,
is incredible.
Yeah.
But after that, I'm like, no more. Like, it can't go bigger. Like, the Abu Dhabi stuff is too big for me. The L.A. stuff at the end of Furious 7 is too big for me. The New York sequence in Fate of the Furious and the Russia sequence, too big for me. Like, I just don't. I think part of the reason with the two sequences I mentioned from Fast and the Furious 8 is I think that F. Gary Gray is a much worse action director than James Wan and Justin Lin
eventually
became in his entries. F. Gary Gray, I was almost curious to go rewatch his remake of The Italian Job to see how the car chases in that movie were staged in comparison. But in this case, I felt like it was the biggest thing with me, even though like there's some action set pieces in 6 and 7 that are huge. I think they have moments that break it up, like really cool individual moments. Whereas I felt like New York didn't really have those, or Russia especially didn't really have those. They tried to have them, but they just didn't land for me.
Russia, I did not like at all. Yeah. New York, I agree that it was like too big, but I did appreciate, well, I've never seen that in a movie before.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of neat. But I mean, certainly too big, and there's other problems with that that we'll get into. One of my kind of larger issue complaints about the movie or whatever is, you know, we've talked a number of times about how the franchise often changed genres, where it's buddy cop, and then it's a street racing movie, and then it's a heist movie by five. And this one doubles down on, you know, you had said, I think, in your column earlier this week about how God's Eye was, like, the worst thing in the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, like, kind of doubles down on all of those aspects, where this becomes like this tech thriller, and I just could not be less interested in the tech thriller digital version of a I mean, this is an analog franchise. That's why it's great. We don't need the digital Fast and Furious movie.
I get such shrinkage when I see a control room in this
series. I mean, and all the hacking and the typing and the pull it up on the screens and all that bullshit.
And they do stuff in this movie with the tech that is just unforgivable, like where, okay, we both love Kurt Russell.
Yes.
He does what he can with this part.
Yes.
But he has shit sandwich dialogue in this movie. There's stuff where they you know, they bring up the God's Eye on the big board, and then Kurt Russell turns to Scott Eastwood and, like, watch these two.
Right.
And then they do their thing, and then he's just like, see, told you. And it's, like, so Michael
also,
Bay.
Also, let's not pretend that fucking what's her name
Ramsey
is anything.
Ramsey, like, is the worst. Like, if I've been watching a lot of Bar Rescue on Spike TV. If I could Bar Rescue this franchise, opening scene, I would find a way to kill off Ramsey and Little Nobody. Like, and I would do it in a way where the fans would know my intentions, because I would do something like they would die in like a kitchen fire. Like corn water would fall on.
I appreciate the fact that this series is so, I don't know, loyal is probably not the word, but it, like, it sees this shit through, you know? And that was always one of the things that I loved around, like, part five, when we get that post-credit stinger in five and they bring back Eva Mendes. I'm just like, God bless this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Ramsey is back, the fact that they mention the God's Eye, like, yes, of course, you're going to acknowledge that we have this thing in our possession and should be using it. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I don't like any of it. Like, I don't like Ramsey as a character. I don't like any of the stuff with the God's Eye. I appreciate that they've taken it into consideration. The last thing I want to say before we get into spoilers is, and it kind of goes along with this whole idea of this becoming this generic tech thriller, kind of like shitty, like the 90s Bond movies, sort of.
It's very like Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, so it's like some cast members have been phased out, others have been brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people have always talked about in terms of what they like about this franchise, one of the things that people talk about is the diversity that's represented on screen.
Yep.
And it's part of why it speaks to such a huge audience, and it's part of what makes it interesting and unlike other blockbusters, right? But I never felt like the diversity is just about, hey, what races and cultures are shown on screen. I always felt like, and maybe I'm wrong here, that those different races and cultures actually informed the films. And I feel like by Fate of the Furious, we keep adding new actors, new characters, bigger and bigger stars. I mean, the people that come on board now are Jason Statham and Helen Mirren. And
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron, right. And so they're, you know, big names and Oscar winners and big stars, all white. So it's kind of moving away from some of that diversity, not just in terms of the faces that we see on screen, but also the way it feels, because you had mentioned that dinner scene at the end, the barbecue.
Yeah.
It's so far removed from where we were in the first movie, which really did feel like this house in a slightly poorer neighborhood in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Very blue collar.
Yep.
And we've gotten so far away from any of that kind of authenticity informing any of this series. I mean, again, even I just rewatched Fast Five. I feel like that movie is so infused with, as annoyed as I am with Vin Diesel being like, this is Brazil. it's so kind of infused with kind of a South American thing. And I just feel like it's getting whiter in both the literal and pejorative sense, and just becoming duller. All of its edges are sanding off in favor of CGI and hacking scenes and control rooms.
Yeah, yeah. One of the aspects, I mean, you've mentioned it, I'm sure, with Doug, but yeah, the diversity is cool because it informs but never really calls attention to itself.
Right.
It's never
right.
like in a cheap way or right. a stereotypical way. I'm okay with who they're casting because,
sure.
because I know that sometimes they will try to cast certain actors and not get them.
Okay.
Like I heard, Denzel Washington, they were trying to get him in the franchise. I don't know if it was for Cypher or Mr. Nobody. It was one of those two. I appreciate that they're, you know, they're trying and they're getting talented people and everything like that. And I think that it's diverse enough where it doesn't feel like that aspect of it is getting diluted. I think that kind of going back to what I said earlier, the problem with the barbecue scene is like, okay, like, you know, you've been to a barbecue. I've been to a barbecue. Like everybody's been to a barbecue. Who's the grill man of this franchise anymore?
Right.
Like it's not really Vin Diesel.
Right.
It's kind of The Rock, but they do an... Are we in spoilers now?
Not yet.
Okay, now we'll get to spoilers, but they do something interesting with him in the last scene, which I have a theory about. I just feel like, irregardless of the heart and soul of this franchise being gone, which it was Paul Walker, which is painfully obvious in this installment... I'm fine with them reinventing themselves because it's hard to recapture, you know, what Paul Walker or to a much lesser extent, like, you know, Jordana Brewster or to a greater extent, Sung Kang or Gal Gadot brought to it. And I'm fine with them like reinventing themselves and forming a new thing. I just think that the new thing that they started with in Furious 7 and kind of are continuing on in 8, I have much less interest in.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That said, let's move into spoilers so we can talk specifics about the fate of the Furious. Spoilers in 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
Charlize Theron in this movie. I don't think the series has ever had great villains.
I agree.
I thought when... And I know you're not a Statham fan, but when they announced him as the villain for Furious 7, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Somebody who's at least formidable and a physical threat. But the way that he was handled, I thought, was not good in that movie.
Yeah.
And makes even less sense given what happens in this movie, but okay.
Yeah.
The thought of watching this movie again
mm-hmm.
and having to sit through her performance is more than I can take right now.
I understand where you're coming from. I think that the writing does her no favors.
No, and she made a choice where she's like...
She's the icy.
And decided like, well, I know the movie I'm in.
I'm the crocodile. Oh my God.
So I'm going to play it thusly. Like, yeah. I don't think it's a bad performance on accident. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think it's a specific choice that she made. I don't like the choice.
Yeah.
And if, for me, it ends up being a bad performance, but I think that's what she's going for.
Mm-hmm.
But God damn it, if I just could not handle... I mean, the movie to me felt very long.
Yeah.
Sorry, and part of the problem is F. Gary Gray's insistence on speed ramping, his insistence on hero shots,
mm-hmm.
his insistence on those scenes between her and Dominic where they're both just like sort of whispering, taking long pauses, just there's no momentum at all, while at the same time they're literally throwing cars out of buildings. I'm like, yeah. You can't do both.
Yeah.
I did not like, I mean, I, you know, she has a garbage character to play. Her
yes.
motivation is stupid. Even her name is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I, none of it worked for me.
Yeah. I feel like I have to, and also not have to, hold her accountable for the villain performance of this movie.
Sure.
Okay. Where I don't hold her accountable is she's given very little to do. She's given bad dialogue, although I figure an actress of her caliber and stature could inject some choices into her role that an actor of smaller scale would not be able to. So I kind of blame her there a little bit. It's unforgivable that she's never off the plane and in a car,
right.
considering her right. character history with Furiosa.
Right.
I'm assuming they might do that if they bring her back as...
Ooh,
a villain
wait.
In 9 and 10, but why do it in 9 and 10 when you could have done it in 8?
Right.
So that is ridiculous. But one of the things that I've seen, Mad Max Fury Road kind of throws this theory out the window a little bit, but because that's ostensibly a genre movie, more than like an A picture, so to speak.
Sure.
But I think Helen Mirren, even though I don't really like her character, I think it's a stupid development, like more stupid than I really want in this series.
Sure.
I think that her choice of performance is more in the spirit of the franchise,
sure.
in the sense that she's kind of playing to the material.
Right.
Whereas Charlize Theron, I think, makes choices that an Oscar winner makes, not realizing that you have to modulate your performance for a genre piece a little bit.
I would argue that I think Charlize Theron thinks that she's playing to the material. I think the difference, and maybe this is just for me, is that Helen Mirren plays to the material in a way that is entertaining.
Yeah.
And Charlize Theron does not.
Okay.
There's nothing entertaining about her performance.
No.
It's a fucking drag. But no. I think she thinks that she's doing a thing that is right for this kind of movie.
And it's so predictable too. It's
oh my
like
God,
it's
yes.
like, you know,
right.
It's like if you gave
a first year acting student,
yeah, you're playing the villain in a
right.
Fast and Furious movie.
This is
like,
what they
this
would
is
play.
How they would play
yep.
it. Yeah. Yeah, there's just no interesting choices there. And I was distracted by her henchmen looking like the dude they take the keys from in Princess Bride.
Oh, you mean this gate key?
Yeah. His beard looks like a barbecue sauce brush. It's just like really annoying.
And another part of the problem with Charlize Theron is all of the motivations, which are very integral to this movie.
Yeah.
Everyone's motivation matters here more than in the past, because you have people who are kind of working as double agents or working behind the scenes or whatever. And I don't think any of that works either. Like, Charlize Theron's motivation for, like, I have to get Dominic Toretto to turn against his team because he fucked up my last two jobs, I think is bad retconning and also doesn't work. I think the whole mom thing and Statham and Dominic, like, going off the grid for 5 minutes and recruiting her, and none of that really makes sense. And again, I know people are going to be like, what do you expect? It's a Fast and the Furious movie. Like, I don't need everything to be airtight, but like there's a degree of stupidity that I will accept. And
yeah.
then there's a degree of stupidity that I will not. And too often this movie, I think, crosses the degree that I will not accept.
Yeah. And there's, excuse me.
Sorry. We're both very sick. Sick of this movie.
Ugh. This movie is killing me from the inside. Even if the plot developments are absurd, I felt like in earlier entries of the movie, the characters have a code of ethics that makes sense.
Right.
Whereas in this movie, a lot of that is abandoned. So, like, let's talk about the, you know, the 5 minutes that he sneaks off to go talk to Helen Mirren to recruit Owen and Deckard Shaw.
Right.
To rescue his son and all this.
Right.
Well, and all this stuff. If he could do stuff like that in 5 minutes,
why not tell his team
what is going on?
Right.
Like, if he can just...
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. It's like your call from prison. It's just like, use that as your phone call from prison. Because they have proven to be a very competent team, and they could probably do a lot of the stuff that needed to be done. I'm sure two of them could have hang glided out of the sky and landed in Cypher's plane. Speaking of which, why is she in a plane?
I don't know.
Why does she need to be flying over shit? Like,
I don't know.
Why at all?
But here's the thing about that Russia sequence. The stuff on the plane with Statham and the baby, to me, was like the only interesting stuff going on in that Russia sequence, and some of my favorite stuff in the movie, like, because it was fun.
And I've talked bad about Statham recently on the show and everything like that. I'm not normally a big fan, but you're like, if you take away his character and you just look at the performance, it is a definite highlight of the movie.
Yes.
I think he's very fun.
Yes.
If you just want to see, like, Statham being cool, he's cool, he's funny.
He's a badass, he's too, because when he jumps out of the car and chases down, when they're in New York, he jumps out of the car and chases, and you're like, oh, it's fucking on now. like, you're like, oh, he's going to fuck someone up.
No, I perked up when Statham was on screen in this one, unlike when I saw him in Furious 7. I think it's such a missed opportunity, though, because the end of Fast 6 sets up, you know, him going after the team. And that strand is just completely gone now. Like, and they can never pick it up again.
He killed Han.
But he's still invited to the barbecue.
And spent an entire... And shows up with the baby. Yeah. Like, has he had the baby this whole time? How long of a...
Is there... Okay. If I ever get, like... killed in Tokyo.
Yes.
Don't invite my killer to your barbecue.
I promise I won't. Like, here's the thing. Like, it's this weird thing where the fan service the fan service aspect of all of it, I'm into. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, I just like when they bring people back and all that stuff. But when you actually spend 2 seconds and think about it, you're like, well, this makes no goddamn sense. Like, Statham, you have to work with them. Well, why again? Oh, but okay, you're actually a really good guy who was like a soldier in the UK, and you were manipulated by Cypher. But like at the end, when Luke Evans shows up and pulls his hood off, and it's the Shaw brothers, I'm like, I'm into this. Like, I'm excited. They're both fucking villains. Like, both spent two entire movies trying to kill our heroes. Why am I excited to see them team up and fight the bad guy? But I am, in that fan servicey way. And then when I spend half a second, I'm like, wait, I shouldn't be, because the movie doesn't actually earn any of this.
Yeah, and also I think it's such a cheat that, you know, Statham is revealed to be this kind of on the outs, decorated British soldier. And, you know, and he basically, like, Dom gets him because he was following his own family code. And, like, now we can see eye to eye. It's like, no, but he still killed Han.
Right, right.
Like,
and
you
Luke
trusted
Evans
him
killed
to save
Giselle.
Your
and, like,
baby.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it just makes no goddamn sense.
I also think, and going into this movie, because the trailers, obviously, it was all like, your team can't go up against you, Dom. Like, bullshit. Yes, they can.
Yeah. And she never corrupts him on the team. Like, I was expecting that, where
there was some kind
of a twist where, like, she would have a speech that makes sense. And her speech is just like, don't you think it's cooler when you're single and not, like, married?
Well,
that's
so
I
kept waiting for, like, okay, so what's the thing that gets him to turn against his team, you know? Yeah. Which is a completely uninteresting plot development. Like, completely uninteresting. It's that she has Elsa Pataky hostage?
Mm-hmm.
That, because he doesn't know about the baby.
Yeah.
When he decides to go against his team, he's just like, oh, they have Elsa Pataky.
Mm.
And then it turns out that she's pregnant and has a baby. I mean, no character has been mistreated, I don't think, more in this franchise than Elsa Pataky, who shows up in 5 to be like, I guess I'm your girlfriend. Like, when I rewatched it, when they show up holding hands on the beach at the end, I'm like, when did this happen? Like, what? I know it's hinted and they have those scenes together, but, like, the leap to, hey, their romantic interests is so much. And then by 6, he's like, hey, sorry, Michelle Rodriguez is back. And I got, and she's like, I understand. You got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, she's had a baby, right?
I think,
because she said, like,
she said that she knew she was pregnant when Letty came back into the picture.
Okay.
So I guess by at the end of 6,
so when
she's
she falls
pregnant,
out of a window onto a car at the end of, I mean, we know that this
pregnant.
Franchise
yeah,
is not super concerned with pregnant women's safety.
Not at all. Yeah.
But I was like, wait, so all that shit she goes through in 6, she's pregnant that whole time, or and couldn't possibly tell him?
I think in 7 she's pregnant, but in 6, like, maybe she's just pregnant at the end.
Oh wait, no. What's 7? 7's the one where she falls out the window.
That's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's 7.
And she's pregnant in 7.
She would have to be.
Or had the baby.
Because she's not sleeping with Dom.
Because
Letty
comes
still.
Back in 6, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's not sleeping with Dom still in 7.
So she already has a baby in 7, in theory.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how close the events from, like, 6 to 7 are.
It just,
but
it's like such a weird leap
to
make. And then she's just unceremoniously executed. Like, she just has been shit on this entire franchise.
Yeah. One of my favorite jokes from another podcast I listened to where they were talking about it was, it's like, okay, you killed the mother. It's like, congratulations, villains. Now you have to take care of a baby.
Yeah, right, right, right.
I thought that was really funny. It was just a funny observation.
But it's such a fucking scummy way of, like, clearing the way for them to have a baby. Like, well, let's murder Elsa Pataky and then everyone's off scot-free because then Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez can raise this baby and there's no weirdness, you know?
And also this twist where Dom goes rogue is so unnecessary because you could have exercised, like, all that Elsa Pataky and the baby thing and you could have just said, oh, we've got this mission with this cyber terrorist and we need your team and that's it. And Dom doesn't need to be rogue. Like, it doesn't, it's not necessary.
Well, it's like they sat down and said, well, what could be different about this one? Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, what about the team versus itself? Mm-hmm. Okay. I appreciate that. I'm not interested in that movie because the appeal of the series to me is watching the team work together.
Yeah.
So watching them just fight each other isn't super interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but then they do nothing to explore that idea. They do nothing to explore Dominic Toretto or the, I mean, the way that everyone else on the team talks about him, the way that, like, they immediately welcome him back. Like, he's driving, then all of a sudden Ludacris is like, great to ride alongside you again. Like, have you been paying attention to the rest of the movie? There's a moment in New York where a bunch of alarms go off or they hear a bunch of sirens and Letty goes, that's Dominic Toretto. Like, we need to stop the fucking, like,
iconology of him.
Yes. Yeah. Like, what? No, that isn't Dominic Toretto. Like,
I don't mind it as much as you do. I mean, like, it is a little annoying to me. One thing that there is, like, a sliver of in the Russia scene that I liked, it was just one line of dialogue. Where it's right, it's before the Shaws get on Cypher's plane. There's a part where Dominic just loses his cool for a second and he just, he has the ransom line where he's just like, give me back my son.
Right.
And I, if there was any time for a movie to take away the vanity of Dominic Toretto and make him just more human and more emotional and kind of more of a raw nerve like we haven't seen since the first movie.
Right, right.
I would like to see that.
Right.
And I think that that one line is just kind of a glimpse of a missed opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise he just is always in cool guy, tough guy, awesome mode.
Yeah, it's like, kiss my son because he's the only thing keeping you all alive.
Right?
It's just like,
every line made me want to kill myself. Like, I like Dwayne Johnson. He had lines that just made me cringe.
I thought I liked Dwayne Johnson more than I think that I do. Like, I think I liked Dwayne Johnson a 10 on Thursday night before I saw this movie. And now I think I like him about a 6. Because his performance in this movie, I've got two things to say about that. One thing that bugs me is I feel like he's performing in quotes, like in air quotes.
Sure, sure, sure.
Which I understand is part of it. But at the same time, I feel like there's certain actors who kind of give like a gravitas to silly material. And I feel like Dwayne Johnson is kind of making fun of the material, where like it's a fine line where either you're in on the joke or it's becoming self-parody. And I feel like he's tipped over completely into self-parody. And then also, there's like lines of dialogue where it's so, like, I'm sure you heard the production history of this movie where, like, him and Vin Diesel were fighting all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, they're hardly in any scenes together. Right. When they are in scenes together, it looks like they're shot in a way where they can be separated as much as possible. So in the scene where Vin Diesel turns on them in Berlin and The Rock is, like, in the rubble of a car accident caused by Dominic, when he said, like, this should be like a really powerful moment of an out of nowhere shock betrayal. And The Rock performs it in such a flat way.
Oh, yeah.
That it is like he's reading the lines
right.
that were handed to him 30 seconds before they said, and roll.
Seems completely unsurprised by it.
Yes.
It's
and
like,
it's,
well, Dominic Toretto has turned.
Yeah. It, like, that was the first moment of the movie where I was like, we're going to have some issues going forward.
I did like something that he says there, though. He says, like, if you steal that EMP, there's no turning back, it's not too late, or something. And then he takes it and he goes, okay, now it is.
Yeah.
I liked that idea because it reminded me a little bit of Fast Five, where he's just this pit bull coming after Toretto with like such single-minded focus that immediately goes away. Because I was like, so now his whole thing is going to be like, we got to bring down Toretto because he turned on it. But like, that's immediately gone because he goes to jail and it becomes the him and Statham show, which again, everyone, there would be these moments that I would like in the movie and they would get me through the rough spots, which I thought there were a lot, but like the prison breakout, I thought was really fun and like a lot of cool action choreography.
Yeah.
I loved when The Rock catches, I mean, him picking up the missile and pushing it or whatever, that's fine. But there's another one where that little bomb explodes a bunch of, and he catches it and throws it. I was like, that's great. To me, he's not, I don't think he's self-parody. I think he's the physical manifestation of the bigness that we're talking about. Where it's just like he's really playing to that.
Yeah.
And it's weird because he's in such a different movie from Vin Diesel, who has always been in a different movie from everybody else in this franchise.
Yeah.
And so that made me a little bit crazy. And I think it's weird how much now the movie just makes him a superhero. I mean, they're all superheroes to some extent, but he's literally being shot point blank with rubber bullets and doesn't even feel it. Like, he's indestructible.
Yeah, and he's like picking guys up with two hands. And,
right.
Like,
I mean,
them up,
he's
like
the Hulk. It's it's crazy how invincible they have made him.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, I thought the prison sequence was fun. I felt like it was in the hands of a better director, it might have had, they might have had more fun with the sequence because, like, you know, when you got like a prison breakout, like you think of other action movies with prison breakouts, whether it's like, you know, Face Off, for example, and stuff like that, where you've got this high security prison and everything like that. And I feel like that spends more time there. So I think it made the payoff of the break more entertaining.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, you get like one scene where The Rock and Jason Statham are bickering at each other in the cell, and they've got some funny one-liners and everything like that, and they're mocking each other. But then it goes like pretty quickly, like in the space. It's almost like Mr. Nobody like didn't even get in his car, and like he was just
right,
waiting outside
for
them.
Sure.
And there's a couple moments like in that prison break scene that I thought were just great. Like the fact that Statham is like just parkouring all over the place.
I like the difference in their physicality.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have seen more of that. I mean, so much of the movie for a long time is devoted to kind of their dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of character beats, which I felt like this movie was woefully short on.
Yeah.
I liked the character beat where the Dwayne Johnson says something ridiculous and they just are glaring at each other, and then Statham starts to laugh. Like,
okay,
I like it as a beat in terms of, like, yes, we need to acknowledge that, like, what we're saying is stupid.
Yeah.
My issue with it, again, is, like, okay, so I guess we're cool now, and yeah, for the rest, like, of the movie, they're cool.
Yeah, they're like buds.
Because Statham left.
What? Just real quick with the prison scene. Like, so, yeah, Statham parkouring all over the place. I really liked the part. It's such a stupid line, but it just, like, hit me, like, exactly where I needed to, like, with this franchise, where the one prisoner is just like, I've been dreaming about this, and then he's just like, keep dreaming, bitch, and then, like, takes him down. It's so dumb.
So dumb. Anytime you put bitch on the end of anything, I think, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. But no, one thing I wanted to go back to was at the end of the movie where they're at the barbecue and Hobbs says, you know, like, I don't want to go on. I don't want my old job at DSS, I think. I want to spend time with my daughter. I felt like just with that and the fact that him and Vin Diesel have been fighting so much, that was a hint that maybe he was going to just basically spin off this character. And if that's what they're going to do, I'm all for it, because his character represents, like you had mentioned, a bigness in the series that I would be happy if they got away from a little bit.
Sure.
And I feel like it makes more sense for, you know, Deckard Shaw to be with The Rock as opposed to being with Vin Diesel.
Right. I would see that movie in an instant.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so there's that. And then one of the other things that I'm just kind of confused by, like, okay, Tyrese, I like Tyrese in the series. I don't think his lines are funny in this one.
No.
They've been funny in the past, but in this one, just, you know, and if a joke doesn't work for you, it just doesn't work for you, and that made it
just
kind
almost
of a
no one has anything to do, you
experience.
Know? And, like, again, I am with you on The Rock in terms of the way his performance is pitched, but he does seem like he's trying to do a thing that is at least entertaining, like we said with Helen Mirren, you know? I don't always love it, but he's trying to be entertaining, and I feel like, I mean, Ludacris has nothing to do. Michelle Rodriguez has almost nothing to do.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle Rodriguez has always been kind of a vacuum in this movie.
Not the first one, man. I think she's really good in that first movie. Like,
I do,
because
too.
Because she's given some agency.
I do, too. I agree with you there. One thing that's always been interesting to me, I heard in, I think it was Fast and Furious 6, there's a scene where she talks to Paul Walker, and I read somewhere or heard somewhere that that was the first time that she's ever talked directly to him in this franchise, and that's just kind of indicative of a problem with Letty, is she's in Dom's orbit,
right,
and she's really not interacting with hardly anybody
right.
else.
Right.
So it kind of makes it difficult for her to build a character except in Dom's vision.
Which, again, I think is a part of a larger problem with the franchise, is that there's the Dom stuff and then there's everything else.
Yeah.
And I like everything else much more than the Dom stuff, and she's part of the Dom stuff. But her role in this movie is to just, like, be worried about Dom, and it's like, why are you taking this strong female character and just making her the concerned girlfriend?
Right.
And you're just flipping the dynamic that we saw two movies ago.
Yeah.
Except she had amnesia, and he was trying to get her back. But we literally just saw this.
Yeah, exactly. And then Ludacris, when we were talking about him, I don't recognize his character anymore, because in Too Fast, Too Furious, he was fucking cool. And, like, even in Fast and Furious 6, he's, like, rigging ATMs and shooting money out, and he's, like, partying and everything like that. And then now with 7 and 8, because he's Ramsey, him and Ramsey kind of have, like, a little tandem, he's a nerd now? Like, he was fucking cool before. Like, why is he a nerd? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, he doesn't seem like... Like, I want to see the motherfucker who has a huge afro and owns Tej's Garage.
Right.
And there's, like, jet skiing and people, like, in bikinis and swimsuits. Like, I want to see that. I don't think, like, Fate of the Furious Tej could ever pull that off.
He does have that beard. Can we also... You mentioned the bikinis, and you mentioned it in Cuba earlier. Can we just get a fucking moratorium on the butts and the...
Yeah.
Why does that... Why is that still part of this series?
I would be okay with it if they were all age appropriate, like as they've sure. gone on in the series. Like if by Fast and Furious 10 it's all like 50-year-olds right, like in right. short skirts and stuff like that, I'd be totally cool with that.
It's just we don't need it anymore. We never needed it, but it was if you're trying to depict part of a culture or whatever, fine. But God damn it, get away from it. I also think in terms of fan servicey moments, there's one other one that I really liked, and I had to, of course, lean over and like explain to Erica because she doesn't know this series as well as I do.
Did she like the movie?
She thought it was okay. Like okay. she, I think, liked it a little bit more than me because I think she's less invested.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think we were both just like rolling our eyes nonstop.
Yeah.
When they flash back to how Vin Diesel bought himself those 5 minutes or how he faked Statham's death, which also didn't need to be done.
Right.
We get the two brothers from Fast Five.
Yeah.
In a quick little cameo there.
I don't remember their characters' names.
I believe
but the
it's
actors is...
Tank and Dozer.
Yeah, I know the actors are Don Omar and Tego Calderon. Wait a minute, Tank and Dozer, what was that from?
Matrix Reloaded or Matrix? I don't know.
You're going to make me cough. Way up.
But it was great to see them because they kind of got forgotten after Fast Five. So I was like, oh, that's a fun little fan service-y cameo, right? Mm. And then 2 seconds later, they shit all over it by having the guy from Cuba be in New York to block... to pull up his van and block Charlize Theron's eyeline.
He's Dom Corleone cashing in favors.
That guy came from Cuba to New York to pull up a van. Like, I liked that that's where it was left because later Vin Diesel has a speech where he's like, I hated the thing about like, I don't need your car. I have your respect. Like, I fucking hate that shit.
I thought it was so funny.
Oh God, I hate it. But I liked that when he explains to Charlize Theron later, he says something about, like, I didn't need his car because I had changed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting idea. And I feel like we could have left that there. We don't then need to see, like, I changed him so much that he wanted to come to New York and pull up a van and help me. Make that the two brothers, too. Like, make them. Mm-hmm. Why do
and
we need both?
I love the whole I changed him thing because it sounds corny, but at the same time. Excuse me. You think back to Paul Walker's character in the first one, or if you look at Hobbs in Five and stuff, when Hobbs's unit goes down and like he's
right.
cooperating right. with Brian and Dom and everything like that. It's true. There's proof in the pudding. He does change people. And the thing that's nice about Dominic Toretto is he represents to these guys who basically almost blindly go into like whether I don't think this is like any type of comment on law enforcement or anything like that, but especially with Brian, it wasn't the right fit. He's not a cop.
He's an FBI agent.
And then he's an outlaw. But like basically
cop,
it's
outlaw.
What I'm getting
FBI
at,
outlaw.
Yeah, I'm what I'm getting at is it's just
like father
being true to what? Leading with your heart.
Right.
Like being true to yourself. Like if you, it's like Topher Grace and Take Me Home Tonight. I don't want to be an engineer. I want to be Dominic Toretto. Like it's like that. So he can change people. It's kind of like he's Bodie. I mean, like obviously because of the Point Break thing with the first movie. I was cool with that. Got a few other things I definitely want to make sure that we cover.
For sure. I mean, there's one big one that we haven't touched on yet.
Let's do that one first, then.
Scott fucking Eastwood.
Yeah, that was on my list.
Okay.
Scott Eastwood is... I'm not going to quote it or paraphrase it, but there's a review for this movie on Birth, Movies, Death that talks about Scott Eastwood's performance, and it is pure poetry.
I need to read it.
So you need to read that. But my original thoughts on Scott Eastwood, not paraphrasing somebody else's, is that I was stunned by how big of a role he had in this movie. I thought when I saw him in the credits and I heard that his character was going to be basically just a guy on Kurt Russell's team, I was like, okay, I mean, like Scott Eastwood is... he's not a star, but like he's a name who's been in some stuff.
Why? I mean, I know Eastwood, but like,
yeah. Well, he was in like why? The Longest Ride. And
no, I know,
stuff
but
like
why is he a thing? Like, I want to call Hollywood and say, stop trying to make Scott Eastwood happen.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I feel like definitely his, the fact that he's on the team now, like it, at the end of the movie, like he's obviously going to be carried over to 9 and 10 is for a franchise that has reinvented itself a lot. It makes me mad that he's filled in the blonde white guy role that Paul Walker left. I don't think that they use him in the same way because he's obviously like the punching bag, but at the same time they do things, and this is going to sound so nitpicky, but this is my franchise, so I get to be nitpicky. You guys get Phantom Menace, I get Fate and the Furious. The fact that his wardrobe looks a lot like stuff that Paul Walker wore, the fact that he's driving like a blue car and stuff like that, things like that, I'm just like, stop trying to replace Paul Walker. Just do something different, right. And that is fine. And he is just nothing interesting about, there's nothing interesting about him. He seems just like a petulant child most of the time. Like when he has his, you know, moments where he, I don't even remember what he did, but like Dwayne Johnson like fist bumps him and stuff like that at the end, it's just like feels so unearned. And that's, I mean, it all comes, this whole movie comes back to that goddamn barbecue scene for me, because you see around the table and you've got people who have killed your friends, you've got Kurt Russell who, like, just give him something more to do in these movies. Like, don't have him show up in a barbecue in a suit and sunglasses. Like, just have him in, like, a fucking football jersey or something like that. Or he'd be like, I didn't know nobody's cue. And he's like, I want something stupid like that where he's just like, come on, Dominic.
At least he got to be cool in 7. I mean, yeah. He's always cool, but, like, in 7, they gave him some stuff
awesome
to do.
Yeah, he's awesome in 7. He's fun. Yeah. But, yeah, Scott, I said my piece about Scott Eastwood. You go ahead.
I just, in a film that's full of competing acting styles and performances of varying degrees of success, I thought Scott Eastwood was so actively bad and felt like, again, a first-year acting student who had won a role in the new Fast and Furious movie. And I didn't like him as a character, like when he was just Kurt Russell's sidekick, because we don't need that as a character at all. We have Kurt Russell to do that job. But when that's all he was, I was like, okay, I don't like this at all. But I wasn't quite angry, except the fact that I'm just like, why him? Why him?
Yeah.
Why, of all the actors, why Scott Eastwood? There's a thing where, you know, they constantly are giving him shit and they try to make it funny that, like, Roman makes fun of him. And you could extrapolate and say that it's sort of an example of their lack of respect for certain authority or people in positions of power. And the fact that they respond to Kurt Russell is because he has earned it.
Yeah, and also he bends rules and he's not a taskmaster.
But
and stuff like
people
that,
who aren't Kurt Russell, they're going to be like, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
And so that may be Scott Eastwood's role, but he's played as such a stooge to begin with that that doesn't even work.
Yeah.
But whatever, I'm going along with that. But then when he's like in the cars and racing alongside them, and in particular when he's at that table at the end of the film, I felt personally insulted. I was like, oh, so you could just put anybody at that fucking table.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And as stupid as it sounds, I mean, like to people who like you and I who really, you know, I won't say like, you know, it's not like, oh, this franchise means so much to me, but like where it tickles our funny bones, so
sure,
to speak.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's something that we really enjoy.
Right.
And part of the reason why I enjoy it is how inside baseball I've gotten about it.
Right.
It's just like it's like my love of Wishmaster. I almost love it more because I'm surprised by how much I love it.
Sure.
With this franchise, when you see that, it's like, the way that I describe it, okay, and I think how my relationship with Fast and Furious 8 or Fate of the Furious is going to be moving forward is, all right, these guys are like a sports team to me. Like, I love The White Sox.
I'll
get you back. All right, good.
All right, phew.
All right, I love the White Sox. I love the Bulls. Sometimes they have a losing season. Sometimes the players on the roster, I am just like, fuck, I got to root for Albert Bell. Or like, it's just like, I got to root for this guy because he's on my team now. And I feel like that's just kind of like, this was a losing season and I'm pissed at what the roster's become because my favorite player's retired and like Sung Kang is retired now. Like all these guys, or they've been traded away or they signed with some other team. Like Sung Kang signed with Bullet to the Head and stuff like that for a 1-year deal. And
but like Paul Walker's,
how did he not become a bigger star, by the way?
I have no idea because he's awesome. Paul Walker's gone. Han is gone.
Yeah.
Giselle is gone, and they have been replaced by Scott Eastwood and Ramsey.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to pretend that that's an even trade?
Yeah. No, it's a bummer, that's for sure. What did you think, speaking of Paul Walker, what did you think of the references to Brian O'Connor in the movie? Like, did they add anything to you, or...
I liked the first one.
Okay.
In the Brazil race, not Brazil.
Cuba.
Cuba. Yeah. In the Cuba race. Where he's like, this is an old trick the Buster taught me.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, when it's like, let's call Brian and Mia. No, we said we'd leave them out of it. I'm like, that's going a little too far.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I thought his baby should have been named Paul, not Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not...
I think it's okay to kind of break the fourth wall there.
For sure. Yeah. Because you broke the fourth wall already in Furious 7.
Right.
So, yeah. It's, that would, that makes total sense to me. Like, when they named him Brian, I mean, I understand.
You knew it was coming. I felt like Paul would have been a little bit more of a surprise, and a good surprise.
Yeah. I thought Spilner would have been a better name.
Spilner Toretto.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just a... He's just such, like, he has such a troubled identity, because he's like so cool because he's a Toretto, but he's also a total fucking nerd.
Ooh, I'm Spilner Toretto. Pass me a Corona.
Yeah, he's like the... What was his name? What's the guy's name in Pieces?
Crandall?
Yeah, he's the Crandall of the Torettos.
Totally.
No, yeah, and then, like, you cut to, like, and then, like, the post-credit scene is, like, Spilner Toretto. Spilner Toretto's, like, 5 years old, and he fucking lies about something, and they're just like, fuck you, Spilner. Just like, you little asshole. You're such a Spilner. You're not Toretto. And he's, like... He's like not even into Skylines or Chargers. He's into like a Gallant, and they're just like, "Who the fuck are you?" No, stuff like that. No, I agree. I think if he was named Paul, it would have been so much more sweet, kind of, not kind of weird.
Right.
Now I want to talk about the 4DX guy.
Yes, because, please.
All right, there is this guy was all right. When you go to see a Fast and Furious movie, especially like. It was my second time seeing it in 24 hours, so I wanted to see... I didn't care if people were, like, chattering or whatever. I wanted people to be excited because it was an opening night crowd. So this guy walks in a little late. Very difficult to do that during a 4DX screening because you have to basically jump on it like a mechanical bull. So this guy was having all this trouble, like, getting on the chair.
Oh, my God.
So he gets on the chair... There's a scene towards the end in the Russia sequence where the mist shoots out because they're going like all the shaved ice and stuff from the cars and all
sequence,
this stuff.
By the way, but go ahead.
I'm not a big fan either. And it happens where mist shoots out at you like maybe 3 or 4 times. And every time he did like jazz hands where he's just like, ooh, ooh. He's like doing this. And it was really, really funny. In the plane sequence when Owen and Deckard Shaw jump on there and stuff. He turns to me and he goes, the brother's going to turn. And then I was just like, oh, we'll see. I knew it wasn't going to happen. And then like when the one henchman and Statham have a showdown, it's the one where he keeps beating his head against the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Before like you see that it's just a henchman, he's just like, it's the brother, he's going to turn. And then like when Statham and Theron are having the conversation, she's just like, I've got something that you don't know, or like it's the parachute or whatever, and he's just that there's only one parachute, he's just like, the thing that she doesn't know or he doesn't know is that it's the brother who's turned. Like he wouldn't give this up. He wouldn't give this up.
His hopes just died as she parachuted out of the plane.
Exactly.
It's like, no, what about the brother turning?
Yeah. And
this guy is actually the inspiration for Spilmer Toretto.
Yeah. And then at the end of the movie, when he's just like, I'd like to introduce you to Brian.
Spilmer.
To Spilmer. credits roll. And this guy just looks at his friends and goes, Little Bryons! And I thought it was the greatest thing ever.
He referred to his friends as Little Bryons?
No, he just was like telling everybody, yes, what we just saw was Little Bryons. But he said Little Bryons. And it was awesome.
Weird.
Yeah, so that was that guy. Two other things I want to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
One is, I feel like, you know, through the, since I've been following F This Movie or writing for F This Movie, you and I know each other pretty well at this point. But how well do we really know each other because we never raced?
Oh, good point.
Like, because if you're down for that.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter what kind of car it is. It's who's driving it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would lose. I'm an overly cautious person.
Okay. I'm not. I really want to get a canister of Nas just one time. Just once.
Just try pouring the energy drink into your gas tank.
I think that works.
Just see what happens.
Yeah.
No, I've never raced anyone ever.
I've never raced anybody either. Yeah. It's just a missed opportunity. And then one thing I wanna talk to you about is irregardless of this being my least favorite movie of the franchise.
Yeah.
It makes me think back on, you know, The Lost World or The Phantom Menace or things like that, where even if the movie doesn't work, I am happy that they exist because it allows the conversation. Because I think the conversations for bad movies and franchises you love can be really fun. Like, in retrospect, they hurt at the time, but in retrospect, like, and I'm asking this to all of you. Like, would you really trade all the jokes that you've made about the Phantom Menace over the years? Like, you had a lot of fun with those jokes over the years and, like, grown moments and, like, hanging out with your friends and joking about that stuff. And that's one thing that even when it's a bad installment, like, I'm going to be making fun of Fate of the Furious for the rest of my life. Like, forever, I'll be making fun of this movie. And I am happy about that because it's like my little carrot for surviving it. So I was curious, what do you feel similar sometimes with bad installments to franchises that you like?
I don't know. I think, you know, they sting at the time, but I think for the most part I get over it pretty quickly because I can just easily fall back on the ones that I like. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't like Lethal Weapon 4 at all, but I don't give a shit because, like, well, Lethal Weapon exists, so I'll just watch that.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm thinking about it in terms of a franchise, it's like, oh, that's too bad where that ended up going. Mm-hmm. But, like, it doesn't bother me that Scream 4 is not great because Scream is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, yeah, in this case, because I have liked these movies and they've been consistent or at least, you know, seen kind of a jump in quality and then been sort of consistent with that, I was bummed out that I didn't like this movie more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I want to think of, like, jokes that I want to make. I can't even remember. I didn't see the movie twice in 24 hours, but, like, I can't even think of what jokes I would make about the Fate of the Furious.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there.
Like Giselle and Han going to Tokyo.
Exactly. So how would you rank the series now?
I don't know. Fast Five is still my favorite.
Okay.
I haven't rewatched 6 or 7 in a long time. Like, my bottom would be, I don't know what order, but, like, 3 is near the bottom, 4 is near the bottom, 8 is near the bottom.
Yeah.
5 and 1 are probably up near the top, and everything else is kind of fighting out for the middle.
Sure. Sounds
How
good.
About you?
I agree with your bottom 3. And then I think,
which, by the way, Tokyo Drift is not, like, a bad movie.
No, I have fun with Tokyo Drift.
It's fine. It's just such a standalone thing that, like,
yeah, yeah.
how do you rank it against these other ones when it's like, oh, there's almost none of the characters that I like. It's just this other racing movie.
Yeah, I also think that part of the reason why I like Tokyo Drift is because a secret shame of mine is that I genuinely enjoy Lucas Black. I think he's just so atypical of a guy that's in movies.
All right.
That I find it interesting. And he kicks ass in Friday Night Lights. He's awesome in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
And then I think Too Fast, Too Furious and Furious 7 are somewhere in the middle, and my top three are some jostling around of the original and 5 and 6.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably not too far off from where I would be. I would need to rewatch 6, but I think that one's probably, like, really fun.
It's super fun. Yeah, when I rewatched it, the thing that's nice about it is all of the angsty stuff. Like, I think 5 has, like, a bigger payoff, but there's a lot of, like, build up to it, like until the team gets together, whereas 6 just kind of hits the ground running it's fun and, like, everybody's kind of, you know, in place.
Right. Well, right. Like you said, it's the best incarnation of the team and everything. Yeah. So, yeah, right on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, anything else?
Little Bryans.
Little Bryans. Thank you guys very much for listening. As always, you can find us at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at fthismovie. We're on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Rate and review us in iTunes. I got nothing else, right?
Right. So if you see Spilner Toretto walking around, protect your Belgian ale because he'll knock that shit over.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.